We have this whole thing called a sleep journey. Listen to ocean waves or other nature sounds or even do a meditation. I invented this way of tracking sleep without touching you. We call it nearable sleep sensing. We're one of the few devices that'll measure your sleep in real time in order to adjust the sound mask. They're actually measuring your sleep after the sleep has occurred, so they can't do anything during sleep in order to enhance your sleep.
Awesome, Dan. I guess we can jump straight into it since we're already recording. Daniel, please tell me and the audience a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Gartenberg. So I'm a sleep scientist. I have training as a cognitive psychologist. I'm basically a mad scientist. And I have been passionate about this idea of enhancing sleep for the past 15 years. And when I think about enhancing sleep, I think about manipulating sound, light, and temperature while you're sleeping so that every human being gets a more regenerative night of sleep and optimizes their consciousness is my ultimate goal. So I've been driven by that idea. And that's what my startup Sleep Space has been trying to solve for. And I'm the founder of Sleep Space as well.
How long have you been working on Sleep Space?
So since 2018 is when we incorporated it, but I was one of the first apps on the store back in like 2009. I've been doing sleep tracking apps since then. So during that time, I was getting a PhD working for the Naval Research Laboratory and Air Force Research Labs, building artificial intelligence models of fatigue. And then I was approached by a professor from Harvard about new findings related to playing sounds that are used to entrench regenerative delta waves. And delta waves, they're finding, are more and more important in things like Alzheimer's disease. There's actually a new cleansing system in the brain called glymphatic drainage that happens basically where during deep sleep, you can think of like the vessels in your brain expand, your cerebral spinal fluid actually increases, and this pushes out beta amyloid plaques, which are thought to cause Alzheimer's disease. So around 2018, I got some major grants from the National Institute of Health, working with Penn State and University of Arizona to create a technology that makes people sleep deeper and therefore reduces their conversion to Alzheimer's disease and related dementia.
Interesting. Is the recovery of memory and your brain after a long, sort of mentally exhausting day a different type of recovery compared to muscle recovery after a long day of physical training?
Yeah, and so basically after both types, I would expect that you would get more deep sleep. So they have these classic experiments where you expose a mouse to a new maze, basically. And even in those cases, they'll produce more deep sleep. And they have it for humans, too. Basically, when organisms learn things, they produce more deep sleep. So actually, a hack for more deep sleep is simply learning new things. Maybe one reason why older people get less of it. And then on the other side, you know, bodybuilders have been using sleep and naps for things like human growth hormone for a long time. Oftentimes, bodybuilders will have an afternoon nap between sets, which will, you know, increase human growth hormone. And there's strong associations between deep sleep in particular and human growth hormone, which obviously is relevant to muscle growth.
Interesting. So if someone is spending all day learning, they're sort of learning new things about, say, marketing, business, and they're just reading books all day for 8 hours versus someone that maybe they're a doctor, they're sort of diagnosing, they're like a general GP family doctor, they're doing the same job for 8 hours. They're not learning new things, but they're sort of diagnosing different problems every day, but sort of the same job, and it's a bit repetitive. Is the first person going to require much more sleep to get back to the same normal?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think socializing with people is inherently, you're always learning new things when you're studying new humans. So, I mean, I guess that's a question of, I think it's mainly like, how do you define learning new things, I guess, to some degree. So I think theoretically, if you were very busy cognitively that day, you would get more deep sleep. But people need different sleep amounts. So most people need 7 to 8 hours. And the quality of your sleep is going to be dictated by a lot of things, not just if you learn something the next day. So there's a lot of factors here. If you have a regular circadian rhythm, if you're exercising at certain times, eating regularly, going to bed at the same time, getting sunlight during the day, all those things drive, how much deep sleep you're getting. But generally, it's thought that deep sleep and REM are good, basically. You want more of those.
Got it. Because one thing I'm trying to figure out, and maybe I could get your thoughts on it, is I sort of require at least 8 hours, and I sort of want even more to sort of perform. And I don't know if it's because I'm maybe genetically less efficient, or it's because my sort of day-to-day is quite a lot of context switching. I have employees, I have the podcast, I have a bunch of different things I'm working on, so maybe my workload is more intense. How do I know which it is?
I think that your sleep need isn't driven that much by your workload. It's more, you have your own sleep need basically. And I would say 8 hours is not like you're within the normal range, So 7 to 9 hours is the recommendation. And so you're actually right in the dab in the middle, you're speaking like 8 hours is so much, maybe because we're a work obsessed society. But most humans need is the recommendation for a consensus report from a group of scientists is that adults need 7 to 9 hours on a regular basis, which is a pretty, a pretty big range. But to get that much sleep, you usually have to spend about an extra half an hour in bed to get that sleep amount. And about 40% of Americans are sleep deprived. So we have this skewed belief that, sleeping too much is laziness or something like that. But yeah, so I think it's just something to be conscientious of. So if I have like a big work deadline, I have these deadlines for some of the grants that I write, for example. There's like a big work push. A lot of times I'll actually need less sleep in those situations because I'm basically a little bit manic because I have so much work to do. And so that's a thing to be aware of, basically. A lot of people who work a lot, I think, are basically in a state of a mild state of mania, maybe to some degree, or they're at least activated from a fight or flight response perspective. And sleep is also how you regulate your emotions. Obviously, everyone can relate to, being grumpy when you're sleep deprived. So, I think as context switching and all that stuff, you really need your sleep running a company in order to, emotionally regulate, for example. Because, it's not like you're doing, and, manual labor. I take your point from before, like certain even doctors are just kind of doing the same repetitive task over and over again. And yeah, I would say if it is, if they're really not learning anything and not engaging with their environment, they probably do need less deep sleep to some degree.
Interesting, because for example, today I have an Oura Ring. I don't know how accurate it is, but I got 7 hours and 20 minutes of sleep. The sleep efficiency was 80%, so I tracked maybe 5 hours and 40 minutes. That 7 to 9 hours, is that 7 to 9 hours of bedtime or actual sleep time?
Actual sleep. Yeah, so you're saying you only got you got less than 6 hours of sleep.
Yes, but I was in bed for 7 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, right. So that would be, far below the recommendation, basically.
Wow.
So you're almost like a short sleeper, which is associated with basically every chronic negative chronic health disease. I think the threshold for a short sleeper that they define is like 5 hours. And obviously like six is also in some studies pretty short. So that getting that little sleep is associated with every single chronic health disease, cancer, cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, hypertension. And they'll do these studies where even they'll sleep deprive someone for a brief period of time, and they'll see all these negative biomarkers. So you're probably sleep depriving yourself, actually.
What's the average sleep efficiency most people have? Like, I'm at the 80 to 85%.
Yeah, so I would probably work if I were to work with you as a coach, for example, and we have like 25 coaches in our company, sleep coaches. I would probably have you work on your sleep efficiency with numbers like that, if that's pretty consistent. So the threshold for insomnia is usually like around less than 85%. We would start saying that it might be a little bit problematic. So you're not horrible. You're like sort of right on the cusp. So I would say it's something that we would just try to work on a little bit.
Interesting. And it's quite strange because I've recently really optimized my sleep. I've gotten a CPAP sort of breathing machine, and my efficiency's still around that helped it get up to like 85, 88%. I'm getting like 2 hours of REM sometimes, an hour and a half of deep. So the REM and deep have shot through the roof, but my efficiency is never above 90%.
Okay, so a lot to unpack there. So if it's 88%, that's like perfect. If you actually don't want it to be more than 95% usually, like 85 to 95%, I would say is exactly what you want. And if you're getting between that, you don't really need to change anything. If it's like more than 95%, a lot of times that's a sign that you're sleep depriving yourself if your sleep is that consolidated. But so you have sleep apnea, you were prescribed a CPAP.
Yeah, I sort of did one of those sleep studies, and apparently, out of the score, I wake up 15 times every hour, and using the CPAP, that's got it down to maybe 6, 7, like near the five time average, and that helped me drastically.
Yeah, so you have like a mild case of sleep apnea, and obviously this isn't medical advice. I'm not a clinician, see your doctor about all these things. But this is something that I'm really interested in studying right now and focusing on. The American health system is really broken in a lot of ways because you have different doctors addressing this problem from different perspectives, and a lot of things work. CPAP is the thing that does work the best. For sure. And there's a lot of evidence for that. And if you're compliant with it, you should definitely stick to that. But just reading the scientific literature, just basing this off of the scientific literature, there are a number of randomized clinical trials showing that, even things like mouth plates can work that are specially fitted by a dentist. These aren't normal mouth plates. These are, you go to a dentist and they have this device to open up your mouth for obstructive sleep apnea. They have to fit it to your mouth to some degree. For mild cases in particular, it can be, it's efficacious. And one of the topics that I'm interested in is phenotyping people with obstructive sleep apnea. I'm guessing you have obstructive. Is that the case, if you don't mind me asking?
So I think I stopped breathing just randomly throughout the night. I used to have a deviated septum. I fixed that. That didn't help. I often my mouth opens when I sort of sleep, and then it gets dry, and then that wakes me up. I don't know if I have something obstructive in my mouth. I guess I haven't got that diagnosed
No,
yet.
I'm saying there's two types of sleep. There's generally think two types of sleep apnea. There's something physical, which is obstructive. And then there's something called central sleep apnea, which is basically your brain is doing it and there's no physical obstruction, which is far more less common. But that is like an important distinction. Most people don't even know about central sleep apnea. So I'm guessing you probably have obstructive. You look like you're in great shape, which goes to show that, you don't, a lot of people think you have to be overweight to have these things, but it's definitely not always the case. And yeah, I think getting your nose fixed first and foremost is important. Getting the allergies addressed is important. There's some efficacy to like far less than the CPAP and the MAD device, but even like training yourself to breathe, especially if you're younger, they've shown that that can be effective. Just training people how to breathe better, basically. myofunctional therapy. So, and we have some people that train breathing on our team. But even if you're still getting like six arousals per hour, I would say that that really isn't great. You should try to get like less than that.
Wow.
I think five is the threshold for it being diagnosed. So it's not fully fixed
Yeah.
for you.
And what?
Usually if people are using CPAP, it's more like two, so maybe it's not fitted perfect. Sorry, this isn't medical feedback, but you might want to make sure it's like fitted right and at the right. Is it an auto PAP in the nose?
It's one of the full face ones. It's the latest ResMed one where it sort of has an algorithm and it adjusts the pressure throughout the night.
Yeah, so it's an auto PAP. You might want to try the nose one.
Yeah, I have the nose one as well. I'm currently split
Okay.
testing between them. I might try the nose one soon. The only downside to the nose is my mouth opens at night, so I have another jaw clenching thing that forces it to close so I can use it together. But that's another problem. My mouth just opens. I have no idea why.
Have you tried the mouth tape?
No, I haven't. I tried normal sticky tape and that seems to doesn't work, so I might have to
No,
borrow.
you have to get like the hostage tape, the mouth tape.
Okay, I'll give that a
Give
try.
it a try.
Because it's
Yeah.
insane. Like over the last 2 or 3 years, I've tried everything. Like I have, the Flux where it reduces blue light at night. I have blue light blockers. When I sleep, it's pitch black. I have the Oola, which cools my bed underneath. I have the other thing that cools the blanket. I try not to use technology before sleep. I eat early. I go on an afternoon walk. So I've done a lot of things to optimize it. And I've finally got it to this point. And based on what I'm hearing, I guess I still can improve further. But like, I don't know what else to add to my routine.
Yeah, we can get into it deeper. So, a lot of my interventions are around using sound. So, we have this whole thing called a sleep journey, and that's walking you through a wind down process where you listen to ocean waves or other nature sounds or even do a meditation because sleep happens, a little bit before sleep. And part of this is navigating technology because the technology can also be problematic with the blue light and stuff too. So I invented this way of tracking sleep without touching you. We call it nearable sleep sensing. We're one of the few devices that'll measure your sleep in real time in order to adjust the sound mask. So for example, Oura Ring, which our system integrates with, by the way. And I'd be curious to hear like how much sleep in the last month Oura says you got. And my system can easily calculate that. We have like a wrapper for Aura. Sleep Space is like a wrapper for Aura. But Aura, Whoop, Fitbit, all these devices, they're actually measuring your sleep after the sleep has occurred. So they can't do anything during sleep in order to enhance your sleep. So I built an algorithm. It either works on the phone, or it can also work on the Apple Watch, or you can even just we have this mechanism. You either place your phone in your bed, or we have this mechanism that charges your phone, gets it in the same location every night, and allows us to precisely play sounds that entrench these regenerative delta waves. So we'll like pulsate these sound waves at certain times in your sleep cycle, and then block out noise pollution. In order to make and associate sounds with sleeping. And these are all the methods of using sounds to enhance your sleep. And then we'll wake you up in a lighter stage of sleep if you set an alarm clock. So that's a big part of my belief in going above and beyond stimulus control. So I'm all about using sound to enhance sleep by creating these stimuli that are associated with relaxation, and then even optimizing consciousness to some degree as well. But obviously, if you have an underlying issue, first and foremost, you got to solve that. Then you solve for the 85 to 95%. And then once you address all those things, I would try to introduce these tools to optimize consciousness through a combination of meditation, entraining sounds, and then replaying those sounds when you're in different stages of sleep.
How do I know if I'm ready to give the Delta waves a try, or if I still have underlying issues I haven't looked into yet.
Well, I mean, I think that it's not necessarily mutually exclusive. It's just you could always try. It's not going to harm you, basically. But it's just what you, it's a matter of what you want to focus on. You know, if you have an underlying issue, the first thing you ought to do is focus on that. So, you know, if I were you, I would probably make sure that my AHI is under 5. That's the hypopneas per hour, basically. Because that can actually make it so your insomnia, it could affect your insomnia, right? Because if you're waking up 7 times an hour, sometimes you'll have a bad dream, you'll bounce awake. It's normal to wake up periodically throughout the night, but and there's actually something new in sleep science called COMISA, which is this combination of sleep apnea and insomnia, because it's they named it that because it's quite common. And actually, funny enough, one of the effective treatments for sleep apnea in a recent paper was discovered that treating someone's insomnia actually helped their sleep apnea too. So we have this, and the recommended treatment for insomnia isn't a sleeping pill. It's cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. So like within our software, we have this 6-week course based off of premises from cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And what those things are is what that is basically changing your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors around sleep.
Now, what's the difference between sleep insomnia and sleep apnea?
Well, insomnia is when you can't fall asleep and you can't stay asleep. So that's the 85% thing. If you're chronically less than 80, almost everyone gets periodic insomnia where they have instances, you know, from stress, from, you know, something happening in their lives, traveling, where they have periodic instances where they can't fall asleep or stay asleep. Whereas, you know, sleep apnea, and it's called chronic if that happens, you know, frequently, but you know, like multiple times a week. But sleep apnea is a physical, usually obstructive sleep apnea. You're waking up multiple times an hour without you being consciously aware of it. And you literally are not breathing. Like you could not breathe for 20 seconds. So it's not good. It's really straining your cardiovascular system. You know, you're not gasping for air when you have insomnia.
Interesting. And is 2 AHI achievable for everyone, or do you have to be genetically gifted to get
Oh,
it?
yeah, you should be able to get to 2. I mean, if you're being effectively treated for sleep apnea, you should definitely have less than 5. I
Wow.
would play around with different masks. Sometimes people are, different masks are better for different people. Also, if you try the mouth taping, make sure your nose is clear. So if you have like allergies or if there's something wrong with your nose, that also factors into this.
Interesting. And Daniel, please tell me about Delta waves and that whole journey. Like, how did you first come to discover that sound could improve your sleep and regenerative?
Yeah, so I wasn't the first one that discovered it. There was basically this group of researchers that originally did it with electricity. So they zapped the brain with electrical currents that emulated the delta wave. Obviously, I mean, zapping your brain is a lot more invasive than playing sounds. So I
Right.
was, and in order to do that properly, a lot of the research shows that you need to what's called phase lock. So you need to understand the electrical circuitry of the brain and then play the sounds when you're in when your brain is oscillating in a down state, or sorry, an up state. So you have to time the sounds to the up state. But I don't want to have to make people wear something. I'm all about, you know, getting technology sort of in the bedroom, but not wearing it. And I think there is a place for wearing it, but I think that a lot of people don't want to wear a headset while they sleep, basically. And so I was trying to see if we could play, if we could do the same thing that other research labs showed in a more non-invasive way with sound. And one other lab out of Germany showed that you could in a phase-locked way. And then we were one of the first labs at Penn State to show that we could do it without phase locking the sound. So I have all these patents basically on how to play sounds throughout the night so that your brain responds to the sound, but it doesn't wake you up. And there's a complicated dance for doing that because you want the brain to process it. But if you push too hard, if you poke your brain too hard, you'll have an awakening and that'll be bad. So there's sort of this tightrope walk that we go on where we play the sound precisely at the right time so that your brain can process it in the right way. And that has a lot of applications. One of them is the deep sleep stimulation. Another thing is some patents we have around actually, you can think of it as sort of inception. So we could actually create these associations with things that you want to remember during the day. And, you know, the classic example is there was a study where someone was smelling roses while doing this cognitive assessment. And then you reintroduce the person to the smell of, they used roses because usually smell doesn't wake someone up. Sound can, because there's like a startle response with a predator that's evolutionary. And then, so anyway, they'd replay the rose smell while the person was sleeping. That would prime the neural connections associated with the cognitive assessment, and they would do better on that assessment the next day. In sleep science, this is called targeted memory reactivation. In common culture, it's basically inception. And so I've built a technology that can do something like that with sound. And it also has a couple other applications as
Yeah.
well.
Is the app sort of listening to you as you sleep? And let's say you are dead quiet, you're at 0 decibels in sound, you're murmuring because you have a dream, you're at like, a few decibels, and now you're moving around and blank, and that's like a high decibels. And based on the decibels, the app would play a sound for that situation.
So we are listening, and you can measure your snoring and stuff like this. And we're also playing sounds, and we're listening to those sounds. So you could see the sounds that we played throughout the night. We're mainly using physiological measures. I think there is something to using the sound, but we're mainly using motion and heart rate, to figure out what sound to play and when.
So you're hooked onto Oura Ring's live data on my heart rate and what's
We don't integrate with Aura in real time. We only integrate with Apple Watch in real time and the phone.
And then how does the phone know if I'm in deep sleep or my heart rate if it's sort of sat beside me?
So I have this mechanism called the Sleep Space Smart Bed that slides under your mattress. And then I detect micro motions through the phone, but it can also work without that. You simply place the phone on the opposite side of your mattress.
That is crazy. So literally, so I'm lying down and the phone is just placed on my mattress and it can detect my heart rate somehow.
It detects your micro motions. We don't use heart rate for that form factor.
Got
Eventually I might, but right now we don't.
Wow.
It's a good idea though.
That is so freaking cool. And what is delta waves? You brought up earlier that something about delta. What's a delta wave?
Yeah, so basically, generally speaking, there's these three categories of sleep: light sleep, deep sleep, and REM. And delta waves are the type of brain wave that characterizes deep sleep. And so it's these long burst wavelengths that are very different from your brain waves during waking life. If you've ever woken up sort of really confused for like a flight or something like this, you're often waking up in deep sleep. It's usually what happens in the first couple hours. You have more deep sleep in the first two cycles, usually. If you're a good sleeper, you'll get a third little bout of deep sleep, especially if you're younger, generally speaking. And so it usually goes light sleep, deep sleep, light sleep, REM, light sleep, deep sleep, light sleep, REM. It's normal to have a little awakening in the middle of that. If you're awake for like 2 minutes or less, you don't remember it. You're amnesic to it. And so, yeah, we oscillate like that throughout the night. And deep sleep and REM are usually related to each other. So deep sleep is sort of when you're pruning your neural synapses, you're cleansing out toxins in your brain, you're producing more human growth hormone. REM, you're integrating information, storing it into your long-term memory and personality, having the intense dreams. You're actually paralyzed during REM, so you don't act out your dreams, and you lose some thermoregulation, which is another whole story with the temperature.
Interesting, because I remember like I used to do this a lot when I was young, where if I was in a dream and I was running or I was kicking or I was doing some martial arts, I would kick and I would wake up.
Yeah. No, yeah, a lot of times having the stressful dream can be a cause of an awakening. And if you're running on high cortisol, if you're running on high stress, a lot of times what happens is you'll wake up in the middle of the night from those dreams and you won't be able to fall back asleep. So, that's part of the circadian rhythm is the release of hormones like melatonin, cortisol. You want like a cortisol release in the morning. That's actually healthy. From a circadian rhythm perspective, you're supposed to get this natural cortisol spike. It's called the cortisol awakening response. But if you're chronically stressed, if you're chronically producing cortisol, it can fire up at the wrong times. That's why training relaxation and reducing stress is often one of the main tools that that we use to help people.
Interesting. So when people in deep sleep, they have this thing going through the brain called the delta waves, and then scientists have somehow been able to replicate the delta waves into sound, play that matching sound, and extend the deep sleep.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Wow. So they converted some wave inside your brain into sound, I guess, right?
Yes, yeah, sort of the idea that we're all just sound is a gets converted to electrical signals. Your auditory cortex converts it. And when the brain is in slow wave sleep, the whole cortex is firing at this specific frequency. It's pretty amazing to see. It'll, emanate through it. It'll start at a certain location deep in the brain and sort of there's a lot of feedback loops and it'll emanate throughout. And so the idea was, what if we could enhance this slow wave emanation throughout the brain?
Now, recently I've been looking into, or I came across this thing called 369 music. It's something by Nikola Tesla. It's like, well, it's based off what his 369, and you listen to this sort of music and it gets you into a more focused working and studying state. Is there any similarities between what you do with sleep to, is that real? What I'm looking at?
So, I think this is the future of like humans finally taking control of their brains. So, like, we've been living in this age of constant social media stimulation and content and all this stuff. I want to focus on what I want to focus on. And so, yeah, sleep and focus are so tied together. I'm actually doing a little validation study for like this headset unit right now called Neurosity. And I don't know if they do the 369 thing, but the CEO of that company had like ADD, and he's all about trying to play sounds to help people focus, basically. So I was just testing this. I'm actually running an experiment on this thing, trying to show that playing certain sounds can help people focus. And then I see sleep as also a way to work into that and riff off of that as well. But yeah, I think neurofeedback, biofeedback, things like this are going to be one of the main tools that doctors and psychologists use to help people.
And you're right, it's sort of like taking control of your brain and hacking it, because I find myself sometimes, like based on the day, I'm just craving dopamine, I'm craving some hit, so I want to go on YouTube, I want to watch something interesting to reward myself, and my willpower isn't high enough to stop that, but I could just play some of this music and it sort of slow drips a nice dopamine, but it gets me focused and I'm no longer distracted, and it's like a it's like a nicotine patch, but it's like healthy.
Yeah. Right. It's like a replacement for your drug.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of ways you can get there. And a lot of people are working on this problem. I haven't personally, I'm not aware of the 369. I want to check it out. But yeah, it sounds like a really good ritual for you.
What's your thoughts on playing affirmations at night? Something I tested previously was just having these positive affirmations manifest, and you just play it throughout the night, you listen to it, and sometimes it doesn't really affect my sleep at all. Sometimes I find it hard to fall asleep because I'm listening to it. Sometimes I wake up feeling more positive, maybe because I've been listening to positive things for 8 hours. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a tricky thing because if you play a voice, you can easily wake someone up, and I would call that bad. You know, they say you should never watch TV while you're sleeping, for example. I see the periods between consciousness, so at your wind down and at your wake up, as you're in this hypnagogic state where it's opportunistic to do it then. You're like inserting the affirmation into this place where you're dozing into consciousness and unconsciousness. You're in between state. You're highly suggestive, and it's not gonna hinder your sleep quality. So we have we do it in the wind down and the wake up. We have like gratitude meditations during that period. So that's when I would suggest doing it.
What's your thoughts on reading prior to bed? Every night I try to read 20 pages. I have a red light and I just read with a red light.
What's your thoughts on that? I mean, I think that's one of the best things you could do. We do a very similar thing. So we have all of our lights turn red. Actually, my Apple integrate with smart lights too. And so you press your wind down, the ocean waves come on, everything turns red. And there's a shortcut so you can just do it on your phone without, because sometimes you open your phone and then all of a sudden you're in an Instagram hole.
Yes.
So I try to make it really accessible so I'm less likely to go into that hole. And then reading is one of the best things you can do to wind down. Anything that's sort of, calming, even watching like a relaxing TV show isn't horrible. But I think probably the worst thing you can do is scroll Instagram, scroll social media. Just because it's like a dopamine burst when you're doing that. So that's really one of the worst. That's what I'm trying to fight against.
One thing that I'm gonna try tonight is combining ocean music with reading. Because sometimes when I'm reading, my mind does wander and I'm not really focused and I'm just reading on autopilot. But maybe the ocean music will help me be more focused. What's your thoughts
Yeah,
on
that's what my wife does actually. So she'll be reading in the bedroom. She'll have Sleep Space playing the ocean wave sounds. And you can set it for 10 minutes to an hour, and then it'll fade into a smart sound machine, as pink noise basically, or brown noise.
Very cool. And Daniel, how did you go from doing like a PhD in psychology to then going all in on sleep?
Well, I was studying fatigue and artificial intelligence the whole time. But then I just took a I so I was studying sleep, but I went more clinical basically, because I see sleep as the pathway and the key to unlocking health and optimum human consciousness. So I just, I've been obsessed with that idea during grad school, and then it got stronger afterwards, actually.
And when you talked about happiness, I realized like when I'm the most happiest, it's when I have had multiple days of good sleep, 9 hours, 9.5, 10, 9, and I'm feeling really happy and present. But then also after getting so much sleep, I start struggling to get sleep the days after because I'm, I guess, really regenerative. So I struggle to get sleep, good sleep, because I've slept 9 hours for the last 9, 10 hours for the last 3 or 4 days. And then I start going down this downward cycle where I get less sleep the next day because I got less sleep the day prior. Any advice there?
Yeah, so I like to have good metacognition for where I'm at in my sleep need, and realize that sleep efficiency and sleep amount often fight against each other. So actually one of the most effective treatments for insomnia is something sort of counterintuitive, which is restricting the time in bed and actually making you tired. It's called sleep restriction therapy, and there's a less severe form called sleep compression. So say you're, only sleeping 60% of the night. You might think to yourself, oh my God, I need to spend 10 hours in bed to get the sleep that I need. But then what that does is you're going to bed when you're not tired. So as a result, you're awake a lot in bed, and then you start associating your bed with being awake. And that makes your insomnia even worse. So often if someone has insomnia, what they'll do is they'll tell them to the person to go to bed a little later, actually. So it's a little counterintuitive. So if I'm ever having problems with insomnia, with like falling asleep and staying asleep, I'll actually maybe, if anything, reduce my time in bed. So maybe do like a slight reduction there. So I think those things are always playing against each other. Ideally, you would just be as consistent as possible, getting like what your unique sleep need is every night, and then you don't run into these problems, basically. So
Yeah,
yeah.
total sense. I think you're right. Like, I probably would do better if I consistently get 8 hours of sleep over 20 days versus batches of really high amount of sleeps and then dips in between.
Yeah, because it's also making your circadian rhythm weaker.
Yeah.
So waking up at the same time every day and eating, sunlight, exercise at the same time every day helps your hormones know what's up. So they call it Zeitgebers. So these external or internal cues that actually impact how your alertness throughout the day. So sunlight is the biggest external Zeitgeber, and that root controls like melatonin and stuff like that.
Daniel, with your sleep circadian rhythm, is everyone born with a ideal sleep and wake up time? And is it possible to force myself and change it to, 7 a.m. every day? Like, I feel like I'm a night owl, but I need to wake up at 7 a.m. just because there's people in America and 7 a.m. allows me to get to the table by 8, and any later, things get tough.
Yeah, so this is called the science of chronobiology, and around 30% of the people are genetically a night owl, 30% are genetically a morning lark, and like 40% are more shiftable. That being said, everyone is probably shiftable to some degree. Other people have like a circadian disorder where they don't have a strong rhythm, basically, and they're like sort of that's a whole nother problem, which is rare. So, I'm just saying there's different situations for different people, and then there's like sort of most people. Most people, you can shift it. I've shifted mine from a night owl to a morning lark. If you wanted to shift it to being from night owl to morning lark, usually you'd, eat a little later, maybe do your exercise in the evening instead of the morning, in the like after work instead of right in the morning, and also when you're exposed to sunlight and stuff will impact that. So it is shiftable, basically. The main thing I would say is consistency is the biggest factor for health outcomes. A lot of times the night owl people get a bad shake on things just because society usually pressures people to wake up earlier. But there's nothing good or bad about, some people disagree with this. I think there's nothing inherently bad about being a night owl as long as you're consistent. It's correlated with some negative outcomes, but I don't think it's causally related. I think that's just other things factoring in. So yeah, I mean, it is shiftable. You can make it stronger, you can make it weaker, basically with doing different behaviors to entrench your circadian rhythm.
Got it. By the way, Daniel, do you prefer like Dan, Daniel, Doctor,
I
Professor?
usually do, Dan.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Dan. And with this circadian rhythm, how do I know where I fall in? How do I know if I'm a night owl, morning lark, or I'm in that 30% that's adaptable?
Yeah, so there is a genetic test by 23andMe, and there's some other ones too. You can take a blood test, it'll sort of give you an indication. I'm not exactly sure how accurate that is. You can also do saliva samples that measure your cortisol. This is sort of expensive. That measure your cortisol throughout the day. We have algorithms where we just track when you go to bed and how much you sleep to sort of give you an indication of it. It's thought that a lot of people have different circadian rhythms because we grew in tribal societies, and so it was advantageous for a different person to be awake at different times throughout the day. It also shifts, throughout your lifetime. Usually when you're a teenager, you're more likely to be a morning a night owl. If you're and as you get older into your, older age, you're more likely to be a morning lark with, the early dinners and stuff like that.
Interesting. And talking about consistency, Dan, like I've noticed sometimes I'll have, Monday to Friday, I'll be waking up at 7 a.m. every single day. Saturday comes, I have a birthday at night, I sleep at 2 a.m. and then I sleep in the next morning. And it felt like I've lost all the gains of consistency and I'm back to square one and I'm trying to stack up the 7 a.m. daily. Is it like that where you lose momentum? Or if I'm sort of sleeping 7 a.m. 80% of the month, I can build something around 7 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely messing with things when you go out late on the weekend.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's not optimal, but I'm not going to say never go out on the weekend either. If you
Yeah.
want to try to optimize for it, what you should try to do is make Friday your late night and try to edge back to normalcy on Saturday. So it's not so abrupt. So you're not sleeping in late on Monday. Because then you're going to have a really hard time falling asleep on, sorry. So you're not sleeping late on Sunday, because then you'll have a really hard time falling asleep on Sunday and it'll hurt your week. It'll kick off your week in a bad way.
On those late nights, whether you have like a birthday dinner, an event that you planned 6 months for a concert, and you get home at, say, 1 a.m. versus sleeping at 11 p.m. each night, is it better to force yourself to still wake up at 7 a.m. just to continue that consistency, or sleep in and get rest?
Yeah, so usually it's hard. It's sort of, I would say it depends a little bit on like how much you're actually sleep depriving yourself. Generally, it's better not to sleep deprive yourself. Maybe the optimum thing would be actually to do something called a prophylactic nap, where you would prepare for the day of sleep deprivation by building up your store beforehand. So trying to take a nap that day, such that you need less sleep, because it's sleep over a 24-hour period. So that's just a little hack. Usually when you nap, in that example, I'd probably not do it for more than 30 minutes.
Interesting. And by doing an afternoon nap the day of where you're going to have a late night, you can still force yourself to wake up at your consistent time and keep up that consistency.
You're more likely to. I mean, yeah, it's not 100% or anything, but sure.
Interesting. Because like right now I'm still waking up with not alarm, I have a light that automatically slowly lights up at 7 a.m. and I still hate getting out of bed. I don't wake up happy. It's like, oh, I need to get out of bed. It
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't.
I would usually waver on getting a little extra sleep in that case. I mean, at least sleep in till 8:30.
Wow.
Like, no, don't sleep deprive yourself.
Huh.
I mean, sleeping until 8:30 isn't going to totally. That's just an hour more.
Yeah. Do you naturally
I
wake
thought
up?
you were talking about like sleeping until noon or 11 or something. That would be bad. But if we're talking like an hour and a half here, so that's why it's all a matter of degree. Yeah, if you're going to bed at 1 o'clock, you should try to sleep until 8, you know?
Yeah. And then Dan, how do you wake up? Do you wake up to an alarm, just like your window sunlight, a light that slowly lights up naturally?
Yeah, so a lot of times I'll do naturally, and then when I do need to wake up, I'll use this gradual alarm clock that also it plays 528 hertz, and then we also have it so it'll ramp up the lights at over 10 minutes.
And why do you prefer waking up naturally versus having a set time every single day?
Yeah, so first off, really the important thing is also to wake up gradually. You don't want that blaring alarm spiking your cortisol in the morning. It's not really healthy. And it'll help you get a little extra sleep when you need it. So we use light or sound very gradually. And I guess naturally is the best just because you're not sleep depriving yourself. More sleep if when you're sleep deprived is almost always better.
Interesting. And when we follow all these, like all these founders, all these business owners, where they wake up at 4 a.m. every single day with an alarm, is that unhealthy?
Yeah, I would say that they have a greater likelihood of dying earlier. Maybe they'll be successful in the short term.
And then,
But
do you have like a backup alarm that stops you from accidentally sleeping in too long and waking up at 9:30, even though you don't have a meeting that day?
so actually Sleep Space comes with a backup alarm. Yeah, I mean usually it'll wake you up anyway, eventually anyway.
Interesting. And what's your thoughts on like afternoon power naps? Like I sometimes do like a 15-minute afternoon nap. Would that affect my sleep at all if it's under 30 minutes?
So if you have problems falling asleep and staying asleep, you probably shouldn't nap. If that's not the case, then power naps are a great way to optimize, give you a second wind, think clearly for the second half of the day.
Got it. And Dan, how have you been balancing, life as a business, as a founder, having your app, and then also being a professor, doing like research and doing grants? How have you balanced, or do they go hand in hand?
Yeah, so it's all sort of the same thing, really. So I get these small business investment research grants. It's just non-dilutive capital from the federal government in the States through the National Institute of Health. And so that's that those grants fund the company. So the company is awarded these grants to do the revolutionary science. So it sort of all fits together. That being said, it can be a lot at times for sure. So getting a good night's sleep is definitely a major cornerstone of maintaining my sanity around it.
And as a researcher who, like, you did a PhD in like psychology, how did you go about finding engineers, finding app developers, and hiring and employing and, HR and company culture? Like, how did you figure all those things out?
Yeah, so it's been a process for those. Gone through a lot of people. There's been a lot of learnings, basically. I've been building apps for 15 years, so I have a lot of experience managing technical teams.
Do you have a technical knowledge, or do you sort of have?
Oh yeah, I program and I'm like a full stack developer too.
Got it. Whoa. So, like, how did you find time to code on top of researching and doing like a research, like
I just
PhD?
have a passion to solving this problem, and unfortunately, oftentimes the person maybe in another phase I'll be a better manager, but for where I'm at right now, I've just had to tackle a lot of it.
Did you have to learn how to code to solve the problem of not being able to work with developers, or did you have that knowledge prior to building your apps and going
I
through
mean,
that?
I've always worked with developers. It's just, developers oftentimes can only take things so far if it's not their baby, and they're not being paid a lot.
Because right now with Studying.com, our education platform, we have developers from India and the Philippines, and for the last 2 years, I've just been jumping on weekly meetings with them. I don't have a technical knowledge, and I sort of can see things. I understand because I've worked with HTML, e-commerce websites, but it's not that technical. I don't know much about backend. I don't know how servers work. And over the last 2 or 3 months, I've been looking into learning how to code myself.
Yeah, I mean, I've just found that a lot of these programmers aren't willing. They might be a good programmer, but they're not willing to like do the actual QA test. Sure, like actually make the thing work. It takes a certain amount of passion, or I don't know. It's hard to find that right person too.
Because that's a problem that I've been going through. It's like every single week, every single update we have, there's like 20 bugs that I'm catching with like without even trying. Like I'm like, all right, let's test this out. And I'm like, dude, like I'm not even 30 seconds into
Yeah.
this test and
A lot
there's
of people don't have integrity, so.
And lastly, tell me a bit about your app. Like, how long has the current app been running for? And like, what are the results? Like, how much has sleep performance increased for people that use it? Tell me about the amazing app you've built.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's the most accurate sleep tracker on the App Store, I think, which is a pretty amazing feat. and has all the meditations. You know, it has a lot of the interventions to help you sleep. We have these sleep programs for deeper sleep, for falling asleep, 20 coaches that can address basically every possible sleep issue that you might have. We've been at it. We've branded as Sleep Space about a year and a half ago, and we've had over 100,000 downloads. So it's been going pretty good, and it's also available on Android. So you can check it out for a 30-day free trial if you do sleepspace.com/union. So we're just giving it away for free. And if you like it, feel free to give us a review, pay us a little money.
And then, damn, people that used it, what improved? Like, did they get more deep sleep, more REM sleep, more efficiency? What went up after using it?
Yeah, the things that I've validated so far, I've validated the deep sleep in a lab. I still have to run an experiment to validate it in the wild. I've shown scientifically that it can improve perceived sleep quality, and sleep efficiency. The next step is basically helping you see how different interventions improve your sleep quality. Because basically, everyone says that their supplement, their thing helps you get more deep sleep, yada, yada, yada. I'm trying to build a system that'll help you understand what is actually working for you. So that's not 100% built yet, but that's sort of the vision.
And when you say people got more better deep sleep, does that mean they had less awake time and that converted into deep sleep, or they had light sleep that got converted into deep sleep?
So in our laboratory study, so this isn't with what's currently available on the App Store. It was like a proof of concept more. And this is a peer-reviewed paper in the Nature and Science of Sleep. We showed that playing the sounds can increase the power of your delta waves and the duration of the delta of the deep sleep at the cost of light sleep, which is what you would want.
Got it. So you're converting light sleep and getting more deep sleep with the same amount of sleep. Wow, that's freaking amazing.
Yeah, so that's just in the laboratory. I'm trying to validate that in the wild. It's a good point that you're bringing. That's my next phase with the grants and the R&D.
Now, is the sounds that you're playing and the algorithm you're using in the lab similar to the algorithm? If not, you have a better algorithm now on
The phone
Yeah,
app.
so it is similar. In the lab, we actually did it very manually. So we had a human stay up all night looking at the brain waves and then in real time adjust the sound.
Wow.
So that was a very arduous experiment. And now what I've done is I've replicated the human with an algorithm, but I haven't validated that algorithm in the wild yet.
Now, do these sounds also help with dreams or affect dreams in any way, Dan?
Yeah, so I have like a lucid dream functionality in the app too, and I've studied a lot about lucid dreaming. So, trying to get you to dream what you want to dream, that's another part of this whole thing.
Do you lucid dream, Dan?
I haven't mastered it. I've only done it a couple times, but there's a really good book on it, exploring the world of lucid dreaming, if you're interested.
Who's it by?
Steven Leberg and Howard Rheingold.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that recommendation. I know it's been a long day for you, so I really appreciate you doing this, Dan. This was so fun. I think me and the audience learned so much. Dan, where can people find more about you? I know they can go sleep study, they can just search sleep, go search up your app on the App Store, but tell us everything where people can find more about you, Dan.
Yeah, so all my research is on sleepspace.com. We have a about the science section, and there's also an about me section on there too. You can see my background and everything.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate your time today. I love how passionate you are about sleep. I love how you've built this amazing product and you're really, product and consumer centric. You're really honest and transparent. You really want to validate things. And I love your mission and goal to really just help people get better sleep. And this is definitely something that you've put your life into because you're so knowledgeable in.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you so much, Dan. So yeah, this is another episode of the podcast, guys. Please let me know your thoughts. If you guys made it this far, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And I'll see you guys next week. Peace.